Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Dr. Aaron Pomerantz, thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. You know, we saw it nationally. We saw it across the country. I will say here in Philadelphia, and Dan Borowski, our executive producer, had mentioned UPenn. They really, I mean, Governor Shapiro here, who is, as you probably know, he's a Democrat. He's also, he and his wife, Lori, are Jewish, and they have four kids, you know, who are in, you know, some are in college, high school, teen, that, you know, age group. And so they did, I think, locally and at the state level, try to shut this down in a much better way than we saw in California and in New York. But take us through your commentary, why you wrote this and why you think this is moving forward so important.
Why I wrote the piece is that, you know, DEI it's a very contentious topic, and it's not something I'm going to pretend everyone is going to agree on.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a topic that actually, when you sit people down and have them talk to each other and dialogue with each other, most people can get behind some version of DEI, especially when you look at the research views on it, and the people who are actually doing it because they believe in it, as opposed to people who might be using it for an ideological club, mm-hmm. or people who are using it just to check a box. I think it's an unfortunately polarized topic.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, we're seeing a lot of DEI offices at very prominent institutions, including the University of Michigan, as you mentioned, University of Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. We're seeing national organizations that, you know, hold DEI conferences that threaten Jews. Even to talk about the Philly area, it's not just UPenn. Even Villanova hosted a psychiatrist, I forget specifically, which she was, where she just spent the entire time where she's supposed to be talking about inclusion, repeating every anti-Semitic blood libel she basically could, save the accusation that Jews murdered Jesus Christ. That's about the only one she didn't bring up. And it was all masquerading as DEI. And as somebody who does believe in DEI and believes it's very important, that's not acceptable. We can't let this be hijacked by people who want to use DEI language, I would say misuse DEI language, mm-hmm. while totally abandoning the theories that underlie it to bully Jewish students, Jewish workers, Jewish families, and frankly, just even non-Jews who have any sort of Jewish sympathy, shall we say. So my argument in the piece is that, you know, there's a psychological theory, it's called symbolic racism. And all that basically is the idea, and it shouldn't be a controversial one, that racism is a little bit more complicated than just saying, I hate such and such a group.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Anyone who's ever had a school bully above the age of 8 knows that people can communicate very well that they hate you without saying that explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
And symbolic racism traditionally has focused on the right, but there's nothing inherently that requires it to do so,
mm-hmm.
as a theory. The idea is that instead of saying, I don't like group X because I just don't like them, you find a more socially acceptable reason to justify the prejudice. Mm-hmm. And that's it's a theory that helps drive DEI efforts forward.
Mm-hmm.
And yet now we're seeing words, phrases like anti-Zionism be used, mm-hmm. to justify clear anti-Semitism.
Yes. Take me through it. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I disagree. Like, just the term symbolic racism, I know that obviously this is you're a social psychologist and a PhD and all of that. So to me, I just think there are some people who are mean, they're bigots, they're ignoramuses, and they're racist. And so to me, there's no such thing as symbolic blah, blah, blah. It's just we need to call people out when they're being horrible and sinful.
But I want to ask Aaron here, too, and I'm going to push back on you, Dawn, a little bit. What if it's systemic, though? Because what we're seeing on college campuses now are a bunch of individuals using the war in Gaza as an excuse for just straight-up Jew hate.
Right, which is hateful and horrible. So as a mom, I want to go out there and go, yo, knock it off. it's a sin. You're being horrible and hateful. And point it out to
right,
them.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I have no pretty words for that.
And how do they excuse it to themselves that it's not hateful, Dr. Aaron?
You say what?
I don't, and this is where it gets really difficult for me as a person who, you know, as somebody who's Jewish and who has his own opinions about it. Like, I think you're absolutely right when you say, like, yeah, it's horrible and hateful, and some people are just horrible and hateful. But I do think that a lot of those students you see marching, certainly not all, but a lot of them, they aren't necessarily lying to themselves in the sense of that I don't think they know deep down what they're doing is wrong. I think they've successfully deluded themselves that they're doing the right thing because of the language of DEI being misused and misappropriated, and also just being manipulated so that they have no understanding of what's actually going on in the conflict. Mm-hmm. And that's why that term symbolic, I think, is important here, in that it emphasizes, and it doesn't even need to be the word symbolic, by the way. Right. It could be something else. It's just I didn't come up with the theory, so that's what they called it. But it's using, instead of saying I don't like Jews because they're Jewish, you know, that's not really okay post 1945. We can instead say, oh, well, I have nothing against Jews. I just don't like Zionists. Now, between 80% and 95% of Jews identify as Zionist, especially when you just define Zionism as the belief we have the right to go back to our ancestral homeland. But they don't. The word Zionist itself has been co-opted, because when you ask a lot of these students, "What do you think? What do you think Zionism means?" You've asked five students, you get five different answers, and none of them really reflects the reality.
Right.
And I think that's also the difference between racism and being a racist. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like the difference between guilt and shame. Guilt is I've done a bad thing. Shame is I am a bad person. Mm-hmm. You know, we can all be accidentally or unintentionally racist, the same way we can say hurtful things to our friends, to our kids, to our spouses. But that doesn't mean we actually hate our spouses or our kids or our loved ones.
Here's what I would say, though, as we continue the conversation with Dr. Aaron Pomerantz. I would say this, that first of all, if somebody, maybe they're not outwardly a hateful person, but I, at the same point, that's why my dad has the word ignoramus. Because if you don't know history, right, and this is a problem within our schools, because fairly recently, I might point out to you, and I have friends who pushed for this for a long time, up until fairly recently, here in Pennsylvania, we did not have required curriculum. I will say it was President Trump during his administration. If you recall, they were the ones that finally got that legislation through. It went state by state. And so I had a friend stand at UPenn and ask people about, like, really basic things about history and the Holocaust. And college students, Ivy League college students, didn't know the answer. In Jersey, the answers were better because it's in their curriculum as far as Holocaust education. So part of this is just being ignorant, and that's inexcusable. But for part of this, I'm going to say this, Aaron. I love that you're coming from a place where you're speaking the language, if you will, to people who would support the basics of DEI and making this appeal, maybe on their level, and speaking their language.
Well, yeah, and I think the reason I'm doing that is because, like, I speak that language because I mean that in the ways that is my language. Mm-hmm. as a research psychologist. Yes. And I think it's kind of building off what you just said there. You know, these kids are ignorant, and that's inexcusable. I would agree, but I would say they're not the ones at fault. They haven't been taught. You know, looking at Columbia, I honestly, for the life of me, can't remember his name right now. Forgive me. I have a 6-month-old. But they
congratulations.
Just hired thank you. But I have they have a professor there who's teaching a class on so-called Zionism, who just says that Jews are not indigenous to the Middle East. We're all just Poles and Germans and what have you who converted, and Khazars who converted to this other religion. You know, real Alex Jones levels of weird non-historical nonsense and he's mm-hmm. being allowed to teach a course on Zionism. That's the university's fault. That's not the, you know, ultimately, you know, there is just a social trust placed in universities. That's our job mm-hmm. in higher ed. We are being trusted in loco parentis, and then in replacement of parentis, to develop students into adults.
And by the way, just to interject really quick, this yeah. very professor, Joseph Massad, who's teaching yeah. this course on Zion, this is to add insult to injury. He's teaching a course on Zionism after he called out the October. Oh my God, I get chills when I see this. He called out the October 7th Hamas attacks. He called the attacks awesome, mm-hmm. which makes me sick to my stomach. And he's teaching a course. And you mentioned Alex Jones. At least when Alex Jones is on Joe Rogan, at least you have Rogan there to kind of like call him out. Do you know what I'm saying? I want somebody yeah. to be in this professor's class to like at least to have a yin and yang, to have somebody call him out for I mean, just again,
perpetuating
ignoramus, ugliness,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right, and that's why I wrote the piece about DEI. Is, you know, when we get into these discussions about DEI, I do acknowledge I have a very different perspective on it. I've been very privileged in that two of my bosses in the current role have been well known scholars in that field. But I'll absolutely agree there is often a break between practice and theory. That's mm-hmm. just true in general. But, you know, there are also breaks between principle and practice, even as a nation. And going back all the way, you know, to the 19th century with slavery, Frederick Douglass, when he talked about that, he didn't say, oh, slavery means that the principles of America are bad. He said, no, America's principles are good. America do better. I would say the same thing of DEI. And that's why I wrote the piece. I'm like, I think these are good principles, but right now they're being abused. We are abusing the public trust by nuts. You know, whether it's a DEI office, whether it's HR, however we want to pursue these goals, when you have the people who are being trusted and paid either out of public funds at public universities or yeah. directly by tuition money, when their job is to create safe environments where people of all backgrounds feel safe, it doesn't mean that they don't necessarily get challenged to grow. In fact, I would argue that the opposite has to be true for higher ed. But they at least don't fear for their lives, and they understand that they are valued. They feel belonging and uniqueness. They know that they're part of the group, and they are mm-hmm. appreciated for what makes them different. That's almost a sacred trust of the university, because yes. that's without a community like that, learning can't occur. And now you have DEI professionals at universities doing things like saying, we don't need to protect Jews. They're all rich and powerful, and they protect each other. You have them even, if not actively aiding and abetting, at the very least turning a blind yeah. eye to these protests. And even though they aren't all as terrifying as Columbia's were, there is still something about seeing, you know, like the red hand symbol or people shouting globalize the Intifada, which, you know, whether the students know it or not, it doesn't really matter. The Intifadas were real events that resulted in the deaths of a lot of Jews, and incidentally, a lot of Palestinians too. And when you say globalize the Intifada, and then you say, well, I don't mean it in a violent way, that's like saying, okay, I'm wearing a Klan hood, but I don't mean it in a racist way.
Right.
That wouldn't be acceptable, and yet the DEI professionals are saying it is. And that's a real problem, and you know, ultimately, when you keep engaging in public hypocrisy, you know, people don't like hypocrisy at all, and they don't owe you chance after chance after chance to keep hearing you out, you know, if they see that you're not practicing what you preach. So because I think these are good things, I want us to practice what we preach. And right now, yeah, that starts with anti-Semitism. I don't think it ends with anti-Semitism. I think we have a lot of work to do. But certainly, I think it starts there right now.
And, you know, you bring up some great points, and that is, and I have had conversations with people who talk about the philosophy behind programs like DEI. You know what I think of? I don't know if you ever saw the bit with George Carlin, and he does this where there's one with the Ten Commandments, and he talks about the Ten Commandments. You really didn't need the Ten Commandments. They wanted to make it big, and they had the Ten Commandments, and he breaks down the Ten Commandments. to basically be honest and not be a cheater. Do you know what I'm saying? I think in many ways with DEI, there were people who were thoughtful people, perhaps, who thought, you know what, we should be fair. We should make sure that we see somebody, we see who they are, no matter who they are, no matter how they're born. No, it doesn't matter if they're a woman, a man, doesn't matter their ethnicity, their faith, that we should, especially as Americans, quite frankly, but that we look at people within, into their heart, into their brilliant mind, and celebrate that brilliance and make sure that every job is available to every person, and that that person can truly, the best person can get the job, not the person who looks like the last guy who had the job. And we see that over and over. I think part of the problem with DEI, and I'm a mom of boys, so I'll say, and this is Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. So with DEI, all of these individuals thought this up. Then the federal government, the bureaucracy, gets a hold of this and funds it. And then the tentacles of it go into the public sector, the private sector, right? And it's mandated. And to your very point, Aaron, in many ways, what happened was you have a lot of people who are not the good, well-meaning people, you know, who thought of this and were being thoughtful and kind and loving, but rather people who have another agenda. And now it's manipulated. And now we put this on people who are ignoramuses, like I say. I'll go back to it, Aaron. I just think that when we make these policies so powerful and then we integrate them into mandates in the government or in the private sector, the problem is there's a danger in that because it can be manipulated by people who are not well-meaning people. And that's exactly what you're pointing out. And then, Aaron, on top of it, look at who funded a lot of these universities. Qatar is one of the biggest countries. Why are these countries from the Middle East, like, do you know what I'm saying? Why are they pouring, like, literally, you know, we're finding this out. I mean, billions of dollars into Ivy League schools. Why are they so interested, Aaron, into pumping this what I'm going to call as ignoramus, hateful policies and professors into our American universities?
I think they're interested in it because they want to win, and they want to win no holds barred. You know, this is Iran and Qatar and Hamas itself. We're not the first to come up with this. The USSR did it decades before I was even born. It's just propaganda, and they're very good. I mean, even Hamas's own charter. Their original charter, reads really bad, but everyone for a while at least was again, oh, well, look at the new charter. It's all nice and kind and left-wing. And I'm like, it's not left-wing. It's using the language of liberalism, both whether you want to say classical liberalism or modern liberalism or progressive liberalism, whatever. It's using that language, but it's not making that point, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So when you see people funneling these things into DEI, I don't think it's because the Ayatollah really cares about diversity, equity, and inclusion, but he's totally willing to use the language of it. You know, even if you look at his Twitter, because I'm not going to call it X, but if you look at his Twitter, and he even tweeted about how, you know what, true women's liberation, you know, Iran has true women's liberation. And I'm like, really? Your country where a woman who shows too much skin gets beaten to death? You have women's liberation? But if you just looked at the words he used, yeah, he knows how to sound like he's operating from an Enlightenment, you know, modern liberal context, because these people may not like us, but that doesn't mean they're stupid. And when that comes to DEI efforts, I think they're absolutely trying to hack them. And I think you also brought up something else as well, and that's relevant here, is, you know, the bureaucratization of this. There's a reference I make in the piece, and it's if whenever people ask me about DEI, I always say the book I recommend is Inclusify by Stephanie Johnson. Mm-hmm. And I remember like the first time I had that conversation with a friend of mine who was right wing, much more right wing than I am, and I said, let's just read the book and let's have a conversation about it. And she worked in higher ed, and and she read the book, and we talked, and she's like, if this was what I saw the DEI office at my university doing, I'd be like their strongest advocate. But they didn't hire people, you know, they didn't follow any of the principles of this book. They didn't hire people who truly want to, you know, create this safe environment. They don't measure their outcomes. They don't, you know, they basically created this office because they were told to, and it's just kind of there to check a box, and it doesn't have oversight, and it's not being, it's not something that people actually cared about. I think you see this in industry too. You know, there are people like Mark Cuban who he really cares about DEI, but you look at the way he views DEI, and it's, again, it's kind of unrecognizable from this more dark side of it. He's not saying, he's not arguing for, you know, racial quotas or anything like that. He's saying, no, I just want to, I want to make sure that we have a true equality of opportunity here. And there are higher level political philosophy debates that could be had about, say, Mark Cuban's view on DEI versus, I don't know, like, well, you know, a conservative take on equality. Absolutely, those debates could occur. But I think if you set a lot of these people down around a table and had a good faith conversation, people would agree on a lot more than they disagreed with.
Yes, and that's true. And it, and I think media, social media, definitely will take, like you're saying, maybe represent the worst of us. And in truth, most of us would agree on these things you're saying. But at the same point, I will say this, Aaron, that part of the problem, and look, I'm the host of a conservative talk radio on a show on a conservative talk radio station. My background is, I'm an Emmy award winning journalist, TV news anchor, worked at CBS and, you know, for many years and all of that. And what I've learned is that nobody wants to have the conversation. I try to open it up. I try to welcome in everybody from a diversity of political backgrounds. And even at the university level, I mean, I wonder what would happen in that Columbia, you know, with that ignoramus guy who said really hateful things. He's the professor. What would happen in that class if somebody raised their hand and challenged? And I think part of the issue that I have with even these conversations, we have to open up the conversation and have the conversation. Those things are being shut down in higher educational institutions. I think that's where we have to begin, sitting down and having people with a diversity of thought.
I mean, certainly there are people. There are a lot of people who'd agree with that, and I would say I'm one of them. There's a social psychologist. He's become more famous recently for his book, The Anxious Generation. But his name's Jonathan Haidt, and he's because it's been very interesting to see somebody from my field get such like acclaim, and it's been really fun. And that's a point that what you just said is a point that Jonathan Haidt makes all the time, and Jonathan Haidt's not. He's not exactly a conservative. If anything, he's kind of a centrist liberal. But you know, and I would not call myself particularly conservative. If anything, I say I'm kind of aggressively centrist at this point. But I have friends who are conservative. I have friends who are far left progressive, and it's through those relationships. Those relationships exist first, and then we can sit down and have those conversations with each other because we have the friendships and the relationships that will provide that agreement. Now, we're never going to have, I'm not trying to sound kumbaya about this. We're not going to have a society where everyone's best friends. That is just not going to happen. But if we have at least a sort of agreement towards civil discourse, you know, there was a rule in my house, the first person who calls names or swears loses the argument. Like, that, like if you could, if we could just have something like that, where it's like you want to represent your side, you can't name call. And you know, if that rule were enforced on social media, there at least Twitter would die immediately. these are conversations that we do need to have, and especially on polarized topics like DEI. You know, I've written on DEI before, but I've written a decent amount on anti-Semitism and on other things that that relate to my background and my expertise. And ordinarily, depending on the piece, I get backlash more from one side or the other of the political aisle. But it's been really interesting to me with this Real Clear piece that I'm like, it's kind of both sides. I've been getting backlash from both sides, essentially saying, you know, well, no, actually Jews just are privileged and you do run everything. And I'm like, okay, well,
wow.
I apparently am really far down on the wait list for Space Laser at this point. And I've also got people from the right saying, you know, like, no, you're just a cultural Marxist and all that stuff. And I'm like, I can assure you I'm not. And I think that that backlash from both sides at least suggests to me mm-hmm. that this is something that it's a societal problem. It's not the anger is not a left-wing problem or a right-wing problem. Mm-hmm. It's something that we all need to kind of share a commitment to coming down and sitting down about. And I know that sounds very pie in the sky and idealistic and wouldn't it be nice? But at the same time, it's like that's got to happen, not yep. just for the purpose of DEI and anti-Semitism, but just for societal health more broadly. We need to have conversations like this where we are willing to learn from each other and talk to each other. And then I think we'll actually be surprised at how much we all actually agree on these things, even if we use very different words and language, like DEI versus equality.
Yeah. So. Beautifully said. I hope you come back. Aaron Pomerantz, thank you. And we will put out, you know, the link for the Real Clear op-ed piece. Very provocative title. But thanks, Aaron. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.